This is a recording of Exploring Semitic and Egyptian in Uto-Aztecan Languages by John S. Robertson, published in The Interpreter, a journal of Mormon Scripture, read by John S. Robertson. Review of Brian D. Stubbs, Exploring the Explanatory Power of Semitic and Egyptian in Uto-Aztecan. Some 30 years ago, toward the beginning of my career as a professor of linguistics at Brigham Young University, a young Brian Stubb knocked at my office door to make what was, in my opinion, a wild claim, that he had found a significant number of cognates that would link a New World language family, Uto-Aztecan, to an Old World language family, pre-exilic Hebrew, and later others. My master's and PhD training made me suspicious of Stubbs's claim because the scholarly consensus was and still is that among the thousands of languages spoken in the New World prior to European contact, there was nothing beyond speculation that could possibly tie a New World language to an Old World language, except Eskimo, which is spoken on both sides of the Bering Strait, and likely Athabascan, centered in Alaska and Canada. The idea of any genetic relationship between Near Eastern languages and Uto-Aztecan languages seemed out of the question. Nevertheless, I listened, a bit intrigued with the data that he showed me, and I suggested that he might apply to the Research Center Farms for a summer grant to pursue his interests. A lifetime later, Brian has established himself as one of the leading Uto-Aztecan comparatists, owing to the many papers he has read at conferences and his many publications in journals, the likes of which are International Journal of American Linguistics, but most especially to his massive 411-page book, Uto-Aztecan, A Comparative Vocabulary. It's an imposing work reviewed by Kenneth C. Hill in the International Journal of American Linguistics. Part 3 is the core of his work, The Comparative Vocabulary. Stubbs numbers the sets 1 through 2,703, but in reality there are many more than 2,703 sets because there are subsets that have numbers like A7A, 7B, 7C. Each set is discussed in some detail, and the serious comparatist will delight in the discussion. His final comment was, "All in all, this is a monumental contribution, raising comparative Uto-Aztecan to a new level." Interestingly, Stubbs's work effectively doubled the entire number of known correspondence sets, genuinely establishing him as one of the leading Uto-Aztecanists in the whole world. In a 2012 email in my possession, Stubbs makes the point that more than half of the original half of the book has original sets, 2,700 sets, compared to the original 1,200 previously known sets, end quote. There is, however, a backstory to all this. Stubbs's earliest interests and training became a lifelong passion. His undergraduate BA from BYU emphasized Semitic languages, where he took courses like Hebrew, Arabic, Egyptian. Then, at the University of Utah, he began his graduate school, working toward a PhD, ABD, taking courses in Semitic, Hebrew, Arabic, Aramaic. However, his Semitic coursework brought him to courses in linguistics, which captivated him. He changed majors and went on to earn an MA in linguistics, specializing in Uto-Aztecan, at the feet of Wick Miller and others, whose program was at the time the principal center of Uto-Aztecan studies. It was the fortuitous connection of his expertise in Uto-Aztecan with Semitic, both firmly ensconced in his head, which led him to see ever more and more correlations between the two. As he began his scholastic career, his presentations and publications emphasized only Uto-Aztecan, with little mention of the new Old World connections that he saw. More recently, however, he began to include his New Eastern insights, but in 2015, he published his crowning work, Exploring the Explanatory Power of Semitic and Egyptian and Uto-Aztecan. Like his earlier 2011 Uto-Aztecan publication, His 2015 publication, Exploring the Power of Semitic and Egyptian in Udo-Aztecan, is also a massive work, not only because of the 436 tight single-spaced pages, but also because of the 1,500-plus well-considered correlations between Semitic and Egyptian against Udo-Aztecan. It is an impressive follow-up to his earlier work. His 2015 publication deserves the same assessment of the data that has been given in his earlier 2011 work, even in the face of his really unusual claim. It is not in Stubbs's character to ignore the painstaking comparative focus apparent in his earlier Udo-Aztecan scholarship. His 2015 publication also raises, as did his earlier work, comparative Udo-Aztecan studies to a new level. His title suggests that the explanatory power of Semitic and Egyptian answers many of the otherwise unresolved questions in Udo-Aztecan that has eluded Udo-Aztecan specialists over the years. Unbeknownst to Udo-Aztecanists, many of the insight of his earlier 2011 publication resulted from his knowledge of Semitic-Egyptian correlations. In fact, Semitic and Egyptian forms proposed to underlie the earlier published Udo-Aztecan forms often answer questions and explain puzzles in Udo-Aztecan that the scholars had not yet been able to explain. The book has 9 chapters. Chapter 1, An Introduction. Chapter 2, The Semitic KW. Chapter 3, The Pronouns of Udo-Aztecan compared to the New World languages. Chapter 4, The Egyptian in Udo-Aztecan. Chapter 5, The Semitic P. Chapter 6, 7 Udo-Aztecan puzzles explained by Egyptian and Semitic. Chapter 7, Other Comparative Matters, Consistencies, Patterns. Chapter 8, Aramaic Leaning of the Semitic P Contribution, and Chapter 9, The Conclusion. There are also 4 appendices which amount to useful indices that help summarize and reference the central part of the book. So A, sound correspondences, B, English index of the correspondence sets, C, Semitic index in alphabetical order of Hebrew consonants, and the Egyptian index in alphabetical order of Egyptian consonants. Also, there's an extensive bibliography and also a nice statement about the author. Discussion, the comparative method. The methodology Stubbs uses follows is called the comparative historical method, which in the 19th century and on has had a long history of remarkable success. Calvert Watkins, among the greatest Indo-Europeanists and a renowned practitioner of the comparative method, has made this claim. The comparative method is one of the most powerful theories about human language that has ever been proposed, and one of the most consistently validated and verified over the longest period of time. Charles Sanders Peirce says what philosophy ought to do, but we can readily apply this to the comparative method, saying what it does do. The comparative method imitates, quote from Peirce, the successful sciences in its methods, so far as to proceed only from tangible premises, which can be subjected to careful scrutiny, and to trust rather to a multitude and variety of arguments than to a simple conclusiveness of any one. Its reasoning should not form a chain which is no stronger than the weakest link, but a cable whose fibers may be ever so slender, provided that they are sufficiently numerous and intimately connected. Well, the proper application of the comparative method does require tangible premises subjected to careful scrutiny. It does rely on a variety of arguments sufficiently numerous and intimately connected, capable of clarifying the relationships among language and the context of language in the context of language change. As applied to in Stubbs's work, the comparative method produces, quote, rules of sound change that create consistent sound correspondences, hundreds of vocabulary matches consistent with those sound correspondences, as well as grammatical and morphological alignments, all of which produced a quantity of inductive material that form a cohesive body. Taken together, these strands are sufficiently numerous and intimately connected as to stand as a cable in strong support of Stubbs's hypothesis. The temptation, however, is to cherry-pick a strand or two that might suggest that it does not support his hypothesis, thereby disqualifying the multitude of strands that constitute the whole. This, of course, is a glaring misappropriation of the replication found in deduction and experimentation, a hallmark of the scientific method. The comparative method requires originating forms and derived forms in each daughter language. That is, there are ancestral forms and derived forms that are the product of different sets of rules belonging to each daughter language. Such rules calculate the path of change from the originating forms to the appropriate outcomes found in each daughter language, as briefly sketched below in Table 1. The real value of this method lies in its power of prediction, the ability to systematically account for data that would otherwise be unexplained or even unnoticed outside the mediation of the comparative method. But that is not all. Consistently applied, this method effects an ever-growing understanding of the character, the nature, and especially the telling subtleties that emerge among related languages, their history, and their consequent relationships. So, the question naturally arises. Does Stubbs's work bridge the gap between the seemingly improbable geographic and epistemological distance between Near Eastern and Udo-Aztecan language families? It is obvious that the answer is impossible without a conscientious examination of what this scholar has laid out in terms of well-established linguistic standards. After all, the data and logic of his work are now out there, open to authoritative assessment. Of course, it would not be difficult to dismiss the whole of his argument out of hand on grounds that all previous attempts to connect any New World language to a European or Middle Eastern language has been so amateurish as to be even laughable by credible linguistic standards, or that because Stubbs is a Mormon, his scholarship would naturally be tainted and therefore untrustworthy on grounds of a prioristic and biased, quote-unquote, expertise, or that Semitic and Egyptian are related, both Afro-Asiatic, but the time depth that separates them is so distant as to make it impossible for both to have any correlation as regards Udo-Aztecan, or that language contact resulting from truly blended language, particularly the lexicon, is rare, or that his comparisons use a variety of languages, pre-exilic Hebrew, Aramaic, and even on occasion Arabic, or that some of the semantic 1500 connections are questionable, and so on. Nevertheless, I emphasize that the massive amount of data are there to be evaluated in terms of well-established comparative historical method. Surely, the rejection of his work on a prioristic grounds, short of dealing with the data themselves, would be unfair, if not even misleading. Whereas it is impossible to capture the breadth and depth of Stubbs's work in any review, any real evaluation requires consideration of the totality of his work. It might be worthwhile here to touch ever so briefly on some of the data. Let us see a few examples from the thousands ready for inspection. And these data are found on pages 6 and 7. There are other rules that accurately predict the trajectory of changes from Semitic to Udo-Aztecan, all of which, when taken together, add up to 1,528 well-considered correspondence sets. To give a single example of the comparative method and the many of the otherwise unresolved question in Udoaztecan find resolution in terms of Near Eastern data. And this is found in Table 1 on page 8. So without Semitic, the Udoaztecan comparatist would have to ignore the not so obvious relationship between the reconstructed Edema in Table 8. And all of these can carry the semantic notion of to cry or to shed tears, all of which are very different, but are derivable from the sets of rules that have application to hundreds of other forms. Without the originating Semitic forms, the specifics of these and other relationships would otherwise be impossible to detect. There are also two dialects that figure prominently in Stubbs's work, and this discussion is found on pages 8 and 9 with the data. Language contact. One of the consequences of languages in contact is the frequent combining of words. For example, in the Creole of Martinique, la peau means skin. It comes from the combining of the French words la peau, the skin, pronounced la peau. The meaning of la is the, and it was fused with peau, meaning skin, such that the separate word la no longer exists in the Creole of Martinique. Without a knowledge of French, however, it would be impossible to know that the la of la peau used to mean the. So a linguist would put it in these terms, quote, the borrowing of morphologically complex word forms often involve the loss of morphological boundaries, and hence the loss of internal morphological structure, unquote. There are examples of this on page 10, and the table includes a comparison of Hebrew and Semitic pronouns with Arabic. Pre-exilic Biblical Hebrew and Aramaic. Historically, scholars have said that Aramaic came into prominence relative to Biblical Hebrew after Biblical Hebrew. But now a large number of scholars believe Aramaic was present and a persistent part of Classical Hebrew. And this continued down through the ages. This is a quote. Very important is the point stressed by experts, such as Rendsburg, that a large proportion of the forms considered as being Aramaisms by scholars are rather likely to be native Aramaic-like features in the Hebrew dialects. Thus, Aramaic-like features were part of Hebrew from the very, very beginning, and it is dependent on factors such as authorial preference, to what degree they are represented in various literary works that range from historical periods. Thus, from the beginning of Israelite history, there were two linguistic strata, literary or formal, and dialectal or colloquial. This situation of diglossia persisted through pre-exilic Israelite history and goes a long way toward explaining both the stability of the literary language and the various instances of linguistic diversity in biblical text in transcriptions. Thus, if hundreds of instances of biblical Hebrew are found in Udo-Aztecan families, it follows that hundreds of instances of Aramaic contemporary with Hebrew through the ages would be similarly present. Northern Semitic and Egyptian. Another question that deserves attention was mentioned above. Semitic and Egyptian are related because they have a common ancestor, Afro-Asiatic, but the time depth is so distant as to make it impossible for both to have any connection to Udo-Aztecan. The answer to this pseudo-problem, however, is not far to seek. In a much later stage, long after Hebrew and Egyptian had emerged from Afro-Asiatic as separate languages, there are well-attested instances of bilingualism where pre-exilic Hebrew and Aramaic is written in Egyptian text, in Demotic. For example, in 1983, Sims and Steiner wrote in the Journal of the American Oriental Society, a paganized version of Psalm 22-6 from the Aramaic text in Demotic text, script. Here is an Aramaic scripture written in Egyptian characters. In 1984, the same authors produced You Can't Offer Your Sacrifice and Eat It Too, a polemical poem from the Aramaic text in Demotic script. In 1991, Richard C. Steiner in the Journal of the American Oriental Society wrote this article, The Aramaic Text in Demotic Script, and so on. There are other instances of the Aramaic written in Demotic script, all of which witness that a certain Egyptian Northern Semitic bilingual was a factual reality. Conclusion. As a practitioner of the comparative historical method for over 40 years, I believe I can say what Stubbs' scholarship does and does not deserve. It does not deserve a prioristic dismissal, given the extensive data he presents, but it does deserve authoritative consideration because, at least from my point of view, I cannot find an easy way to challenge the breadth and depth of his data. This has been a recording of Exploring Semitic and Egyptian in Uto-Aztecan Languages by John S. Robertson, originally published in Interpreter, a Journal of Mormon Scripture, Volume 25, 2017, read by John S. Robertson. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged. The journal and its website are credited and is for non-commercial use. A printed version of this and many other articles and resources on Mormon Scripture can be found at mormoninterpreter.com.